Hey, you're listening to Don't Make Sense. I'm Dr. Vivian Rodriguez, an educational psychologist, blogger, educator, and coach who loves to talk about style, life, creating, and mental health. Okay, so I started this podcast to create a space to talk about style and substance, to talk about the complexities of being a woman who's authentic and thriving. All right, let's get into it. All right, so today we have Janelle here joining us again. We had a podcast episode where we did a live together, and so now we're just going to focus on her, and so we can hear about her story and her content creation. She is a Texas influencer. She's been a freelance fashion contributor for Stylish TV for several years. She believes in empowering women through fashion and helping them feel beautiful no matter what, their financial situation, body shape, age, or where they live or work. And you can find her on Instagram and on her blog, thefashionlotus.com. So thanks for being on the show, Janelle.
Thank you so much for having me, Vivian. I've been a fan of your podcast for a while now.
Oh, super cool. Okay. It's like somebody's listening. Yes. Anyway, okay, so let's get into, how did you start blogging and creating content? I mean, I think we connected to through like curly hair content, because I know you talk about that. So yeah, just talk about your blogging and how you started with the content creation.
Yes. Well, I started blogging officially in 2012. Before that, I had probably posted on one of my social media, like an outfit of the day, as kind of like a little creative outlet, especially during a time that I was traveling so much for work. So I would be like, okay, this is my little outfit. And I would post, like, I would take a picture in front of a mirror and post it on my Facebook, for example. And a high school friend of mine actually said, I love your outfit posts and how you put things together. Would you even like try to consider doing a blog? And I'm like, no one here wants to hear what I have to say. That's silly. I'm not going to post a blog. And I started looking up all of these bloggers that I look up to today, like Chiara Ferragni of the Blonde Salad, and following Song of Style, like all of the OG bloggers, Brian Boy, Susie Bubble, and all of these OG bloggers. And I was like, I don't know if I can do what they do. I feel like there's a lot of time and money involved in this. I have a full-time job. I have, you know, a household, a husband, the dog, and I don't know if I can do all that. So I hesitated for about a good year. And about 2012, around September through fall, we moved from Puerto Rico to San Antonio, Texas. And we had no family, no friends, no contacts. All I had was one coworker that I knew from my travels, and that's it. And I had only visited San Antonio once, around a month before we moved and made that big decision. Yeah. So I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing over here, but we're gonna try. And so as a way to get to know the city, we just started taking pictures of landmarks, restaurants, experiences. And of course we were in the pictures. And so it was more like a way to show off the city and show off this new place and document my experience through blogging. And that's how it started. In 2012. But in finding that name, and that name that stuck and that also made sense to me personally, I selected the Fashion Lotus because the lotus flower is very significant in my philosophy and religious practice. So it really symbolizes that. It symbolizes several things, but mostly it's like the whole no mud, no lotus comment that you've heard. It really is like showing how you can be like an element of beauty and love and resilience within murky and kind of muddy circumstances. So the way I wanted to focus it with fashion is, how can we use fashion as a way to express that survival, basically? And so that's why the whole Fashion Lotus started. And it was approved by my best friends, so that was a huge factor, but it stuck. And so that's how I started the Fashion Lotus in 2012.
Okay, so yeah, 2012. Yeah, that was where like the main bloggers out there were, like Song of Style and other folks like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love the idea or like behind the name too. And I was reading that, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. So now let's talk about, you know, one of the things that I noticed you talk about a lot in your content, which I love, is being Afro-Latina. How did you kind of get to that space? Because I feel like that's something that is more kind of mainstream now, but before people weren't really kind of using that term as much, or at least not in my world. So kind of how did you get to that place?
I really don't remember where I got it from. It was a while ago, before it became popular, that I started using the term. It was funny because a Facebook memory popped up and I did like this whole speech on being Afro-Latina and my experience on identity, especially being someone who was born and raised in New York of Dominican immigrant parents. My family is a huge, I'm sure yours is the same, a huge range of skin tones and like back, what looks like we're not even in the same family. It's so funny sometimes. We have the fairest of fair with the blonde hair, blue eyes, and the darkest, darkest shade that you can, you know, see in the range in Dominican culture and Dominican heritage. So for me, I've always felt like a weird in-betweener because I am a little bit more light-skinned, but I'm the darkest one in my core family. So it's, and then I have the curly hair and I'm thinking, what am I? Like, who am I ethnically? Like, I'm trying to decipher that. And I don't know, honestly, I couldn't tell you where I found it, but it was a long time ago that I started speaking up about my experience as an Afro-Latina and not fitting here or fitting there. I wrote something for Hispanicize that they had requested experiences on like your immigration status or your family's immigration story and your own personal experience. So I wrote this whole story about like that aspect of my life and then how I came to the conclusion, this is where I feel most comfortable identifying as an Afro-Latina woman, Dominican American and proud.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think that's what I saw. We both have the t-shirts. It says like Dominican, I think the one, and then Afro-Latin, I have one of those shirts too.
Yes.
And yeah, it's, I feel like it is like so helpful to have that out there for other people who aren't sure where they kind of fit in. Cause I've had, you know, someone contact me and said, and they were Dominican, like, how did you decide you're Afro-Latin? I'm like, what do you mean? That's what's happening.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I thought it was interesting. I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I think for me, it was really a hands down love and affection and acceptance of my background in the sense of like, I love my grandfather so much and he was very dark and he used to tell me about his experiences as a Black Dominican man, but this whole Afro-Latino concept or Afro-Caribbean, Caribeño wasn't a concept when I was little, but he would tell me about his experiences and I'm like, I'm so connected to you in so many ways. And even though our skin tone doesn't match, that's where my blood comes from. So how to deny that? You know, it was impossible for me to deny that. And so while maybe some of my siblings don't necessarily identify the same way as I do, especially because their complexion is more of indigenous root. So they have like a very beautiful tan skin with straight hair. And like the factions are very much more on the indigenous side. So they're more Afro-Taino if they would decide to identify that way. But it's that range, you know? And so for me, it really is a personal choice. So I love that ability that we have now with the terminologies. And so however you feel more closely to heritage-wise, I think identify with it and go for it. It's fabulous.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes you happy.
Right. That's the whole point. All right. And I know you've talked about the importance of mental health. You've been open about going to counseling. Our last conversation, that's what we were talking about. And then you also talked about, you've shared the experience of having a miscarriage during the pandemic. So did that lead to you embracing, kind of seeking mental health support? Like how, maybe do you want to share a bit about that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important that we talk openly about this. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to continue this conversation because a lot of people and women in my situation stay very quiet about it. So I think it's so important for that healing process. So for me, I had already been through a cycle of therapy when I was young, in my early 20s. My mother had cancer and we had all had to jump in and deal with the issue, right? And so I took charge. I was about 19, actually, when it all started, but it went through my 20s. So I had to take charge, and I was taking a full load of university classes at the University of Puerto Rico. And my father was running a business, pretty big operation that he was mentally incapable of taking on when my mother's diagnosis. So I had to take on a lot of the responsibility as a young adult of taking care of a 6-person household with a cancer patient, people depressed, full-time job, full-time school, and it was intense. And I just pushed through for about a year. And fortunately and thankfully, my mother is, you know, came out on the other side after many courses of treatment, but the family was in a disarray. And so I was going on adrenaline for like a year. And after that, I completely fell apart. I couldn't get out of bed. I didn't want to work. It was off school season and I wasn't taking summer school. So it was really intense for me. So I broke down one day and I said, okay, I've been stuck in a room for 2 months. This is insane. Let me get out of this. And I asked for help. And I told, you know, my boyfriend at the time, his father is a psychologist, and he told me that obviously he couldn't attend me because it was a conflict of interest. Like, I'm a part of that family, essentially. And so he recommended me to some colleague of his, and I loved it. I had an amazing experience with therapy as a young person. And so after that experience, I've been an avid and open advocate for therapy and mental health, taking care of yourself. And so for me, that experience, I recommended it to everyone. I was like, yes, I went through it and it was fabulous. And I feel so much better now. And I've improved my life incredibly. So I definitely loved it. And so when I went through the experiences of the miscarriage, the first one last year was in May of 2020. And I think I was close to 9 weeks along. So I was just a month short of being able to announce it to my family. So of course, you know, that was devastating, but I kept on chugging along. And I took maybe 2 or 3 days off of work and just kept going, right? And so when I had the second miscarriage on Thanksgiving, during that week, I said, yeah, I'm gonna need some assistance because I don't know how to deal with this on my own. Before I sought help, I decided to speak up about it. So actually, even after the first miscarriage, I decided, and I made a YouTube video around August, and I decided to come out with it because I was telling very close people in my life, and they were telling me, you know what? I know someone who went through it. You know what? I actually went through this. And I was like, what? And so very slowly but surely, I started getting so many experiences and people telling me their stories and actually like very intense stories from family members, very close family members. I had no idea. And they said, I never shared this with anybody, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. Okay. So I decided to go public with it because I have the platform. And I said, you know what, this needs to be talked about because all of the stories I'm hearing, these women have never spoken up. They didn't seek help. They went through it alone, not even with a partner. It was just a horrible experience and they've had to live with that by themselves. And I thought, I want you to know that you're not alone. So I did the YouTube video and it was a wonderful experience. The feedback that I received alone was incredible. And people's stories, they would go public. They commented on the posts. They commented in private, they emailed me, telephone, like it was just so many different ways that I was able to connect with women and men actually too. Men who were struggling with fertility issues, men who were struggling with their partners having had miscarriage, multiple miscarriage, they reached out to me too. And I thought, this is so important. And so with that, I started to speak up more about it. And after my second one, I just wrote a blog about the experience. I didn't want to do another video, but the blog post was more of a hopeful post. So I had to wait because I wasn't feeling very hopeful at the beginning, right? So I had to wait a little bit to feel better and start my therapy. And so once I started therapy, I decided to come out with the second miscarriage story. and also received a ton of beautiful feedback and conversations and dialogue started after that. So it was, I'm happy with the choice that I made to share it. I know it's such a taboo, especially in our culture, to right. talk about private things. Oh no, you don't talk about that. That's verboten. And so I was like, no, we're going to be different and we're going to break the cycle because of our traditions and our heritage, at least in my culture, Dominican culture is just very strong-willed and, you know, mm-hmm. we're taught to overachieve and we're taught to stay quiet when things go bad, but celebrate the things that are good. But I'm like, yeah, that's not very healthy. So I decided to break that cycle and speak up about it.
And what a gift, right? Mm-hmm. Because then people got to feel seen and feel not like they're not alone. And then you also had another, you know, in written form talking about like a hopeful perspective too. And you probably just helped a lot of people just feel, you know, validated about their feelings and their experience. And I know what you're talking about, the whole like, just shut up and color. Don't get upset. Mm-hmm. Just move on. Or people just saying really unhelpful things. I have not gone through a miscarriage. But I think that I could imagine that people could make comments, you know, like family members, like they don't know what to say. And so they say things where you're like, why did you just say that?
Yes. I heard a lot of but at least, you know, you can get pregnant. You considered adopting. And I'm like, you know what?
Yeah.
That's not the point. Okay.
Yes. Or, you know, I mean, yeah, just any kind of challenge or situation that is difficult is met with, well, you know, this person over here doesn't have arms. Okay, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about how I feel at this point in time
exactly.
about this experience. And I want you just to hold space and let me sit with my emotions and work through it. And I don't need to hear about someone else has it terrible. They go, yeah, but someone else has it better too sometimes too, right?
Yeah.
So like, let me just be, you know? So I think that's so wonderful that you gave people that opportunity to just, you know, go and watch your video or read about it and feel like, yes, you get it. And not coming with some other, you know, Hallmark cards, comments and stuff where you're like, oh my gosh, can you just stop?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then you've also talked about a lot in your content. You've talked a lot about like sustainable fashion. How did you kind of get to that, you know, kind of world? And you always come up with these cute like kind of style ideas from the I think it's Goodwill, right?
Is yes.
Yeah.
I am a Goodwill girl. Yes, 100%. Actually, the idea behind the Fashion Lotus was always to direct in a sustainable fashion way. Uh-huh. And the reason why it wasn't in my original bio, whenever you find it and I have to update that for sure, is because I couldn't find good sustainable fashion that was affordable. And so for me, affordability, listen, I was raised on a budget. So, but at the same time, we were also proud people. So we were also the folks, like I would have new things all the time, balling on a budget, but new things probably every week when I was young growing up. Mm-hmm. And especially that time I had braces because I had to go monthly. And so my dad would be like, here's some extra money so you can go shopping because the orthodontist just happened to be at Plaza Las Americas, like the largest mall in Puerto Rico. So I was like, woohoo, with a ball of cash in my hands, shopping at like 579 and Contempo Cash.
I know those places.
I know, right? But those were the original fast fashion folks. Mm-hmm. And so having that like sense of I like nice things and I like new things, but when I got to high school, I started learning about like environmental issues that were going on, and I became very passionate about that. That was like my first encounter with all of the concepts of sustainability and environmental awareness and protecting our resources. So I decided to major, well, actually I majored in political science in college, but let's not talk about that because I went in another direction after seeing the realities of it. And then I decided to get a master's degree in environmental affairs focusing on natural resource conservation and management.
Oh, how cool.
So that's my, that's my background when it comes to why I love the environment so much and my need to really advocate towards its protection and conservation. So when it came to my fashion, I was still shopping at Forever 21 and all of these other fast fashion shops. And so it wasn't really aligning. And something somewhere I must have read that it clicked that fashion needs to be sustainable. So when I started the blog in 2012, I started researching like crazy. I didn't just start. I started researching like crazy. And I hit a wall because all of the sustainable fashion options were extremely expensive. And if you can afford a $200 cotton shirt, then great. I love it. Love that journey for you. But for me, yes, I probably could have afforded it, but I would have rather spend that money on experiences, on traveling and things like that. That's my personal choice. Food, you know, all the money that goes to food. Girls got to eat. So honestly, I wasn't willing to pay that much. And so I hit that wall. And so I kind of put that on the back burner until I either found something that suited a budget or made it up myself. And it was always in my head, maybe I'll start my own fashion line that's sustainable and affordable.
Okay.
That wasn't a thing back then, though. It really wasn't. And I'm only talking about 9 years ago. This isn't even like a full 10 years. Mm-hmm. But there were bloggers out there that were doing the sustainable fashion thing, and they were posting these clothing items and these accessories that unfortunately they wouldn't be in a regular person's budget necessarily. Like I would probably buy one thing out of that and be like, I could have gotten five things for that price. And that's my mentality. And that's probably where all that comes from.
Right. Yeah.
So I really did put it on the back burner, but whenever I would find things, I would post about it. But it was slowly creeping in, and I didn't want to designate myself as a sustainable fashion blogger at the time because I wasn't fully committed because I couldn't find what worked for me. And that was the reality. Okay. And I followed bloggers like Sustainably Chic and now Sustainababe and Sustainably Sage. Like these folks are kind of the for me, they're the pioneers in this area, especially Sustainably Chic. And I love her, Natalie. She's the best. And she's inspired me incredibly. And so still, I was still looking for that budget friendly. And they're coming up now. And so when they started coming up and showing up, and I would just discover them by looking up hashtags, I discovered boutiques that were offering really, really great prices. So I started connecting with them. And so that's how I started getting a little bit more deep into that realm. And Goodwill reached out to me because somebody had told them that I was, you know, trying to get into sustainable fashion. And so Goodwill reached out to me and we started this collaboration in 2019. So ever since I've been a blogger for them and on their site. And honestly, I find the bombest items at Goodwill. It's incredible. I find true vintage. I find, you know, designer items. I find nameless things that are like, whoa, this is a find. You know, so I really am a huge advocate for secondhand shopping, even though I wasn't necessarily raised that way. But now I'm teaching you and everyone that is willing to hear me teaching how you can be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. And I've been met with resistance. I'm not going to lie. It's been interesting. Oh. Yes, it's been very interesting. Okay. Because when you make a change. Yeah, I know. It's interesting because it's not because I'm doing something good. It's because I'm critiquing what I used to do and how I used to live my life. I'm not critiquing you. I'm just talking about myself. If your buttons are a little bit touched because you're still resisting the whole changing from fast fashion to more sustainable fashion, then that is something that you need to work out on if that's something that you're that's bugging you, right? But I think when you're met with resistance, I mean, you're doing something good.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, and talk about, because culturally, I know I thrift and I go to, there's Goodwill over here, but I usually go to Savers is what we have over here. And I donate to theirs, you know, donate to them and then buy there and that kind of thing. and I've done a couple podcasts and blog posts on it. And I remember in high school when I started going, I would go thrifting. And my parents are like, why do you want to get like used clothes? Mm-hmm. Like, we got clothes here. What's your problem? You know, people are going to think you're something's wrong and all that. How did you kind of, you know, I guess, did you consider the cultural sorts of norms where they're like, why are you going to use clothes? Or you just were like, whatever, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Well, I started honestly shopping vintage before I shopped Goodwill.
Oh, I see.
Because it was a process for me too. You know, you have to get out of your own head. And mentally, I was thinking, well, Goodwill is a great option if you don't have the means to shop mm-hmm. new. And so that's the mentality, right? And we grew up a lot donating constantly. Our trips to DR were bringing in 2 suitcases per person, and yes, one yes. comes back empty. So this is part of our culture anyway, in the sense of immigrants usually do this, where they're always uh-huh. watching what's going on back home and how they can help back home, because I have succeeded in life, right? Because I made mm-hmm. it to the grand American dream, to make it in life and to also give back to your community back home in your country. And mm-hmm. so I always grew up with that sense. But I also grew up thinking, you know, I'm so fortunate and look at me giving, but I don't need to take. And it was that mentality of, I don't need it. But when I grew up and started shopping at Goodwill, even after doing the vintage thing, I had to change my mindset and think, this is for everyone. And we really need to rid ourselves of this stigma that if you shop secondhand, it's because you can't afford new stuff, which is such a toxic mentality because the reality is why not prolong the life of an item that is still in good condition or give it new life completely, like break it up into a million pieces and make it something new. I used to do that all the time. I used to take t-shirts and cut them up and turn it into a halter, do this whole thing, super fun. Uh-huh. So it was not that hard of a transition for me because I've always been a rebel, and that stems from like me having different hair from like a lot of people that I knew. So we'll talk about that. I know, I'm sure. But me being a rebel, it was such an easy transition. It was like, you know what? I want to be a rebel for good, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm okay with shopping secondhand and not thinking, ooh, this belongs to someone else. Not at all like that. I just think about it as giving it new love, giving it a new home and cherishing, and also going back to the circle. So once I'm done with it, then it goes back into the circle. And I first start with my siblings. I'm like, do you guys need these things? Would you like it? If they don't, if they're not down, they always take stuff. But if they're not down, then I'll, you know, sell it or turn it into Goodwill in return. So I have no issues with that, but I think it's a mental block that oneself has to get over. I didn't really like consult with anyone.
No, and I agree. Like I like the whole go and find something, you know, I've found like a tulle skirt that I've worn like millions of times. And then people are like, where'd you get that? I'm like, oh, it's thrifted. And like, oh, and then they start going, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I want to try this. Like, you were hating before, you know? Now you're on board. So I think it's just kind of like moving forward and trying different things, and then people will go, oh, okay. And you're kind of leading by example.
Yes. You know, it really is important, I think, to note that if you're trying to step into a more sustainable lifestyle and you're not trying to be like this whole, let's live in the woods and become a hermit and not depend on anything. If that's what you want to do, then fabulous. But in most cases, people need to ease into it. And I think Goodwill is a really good way to ease into creating a more sustainable lifestyle in general, because you have everything. And then when it came to shopping, when it came to actual, you know, new, if I wanted, then I have been shopping more consciously. So I look for everything. So if this is something that you're trying to do, I look for things like where and how was it manufactured? Are the processes sustainably made? And so in the sense of not just the materials that are used, like if you're using recycled knits, recycled polyester, organic cotton, things like that, tencel and like more innovative type of materials and fabrics like pineapple leathers and
interesting.
Yes, there's a lot of innovation in the sustainable fashion like world. And mm-hmm. I look for those kinds of things, but I also look for the processes. Are the factories, are they sustainable? Mm-hmm. Are they certified? Because you have to follow certain requirements to gain these certifications. Are they treating their employees ethically? Are they fairly paid? So those things I'm looking for, and they're popping up, and they're affordable. So I love that concept. For me, it's just making it more accessible to the general public, because that excuse was so prevalent. It's like, I can't shop sustainably because I can't afford it. And now there are so many like options popping up, and I think it's fascinating, and I think it's wonderful. And I am here to be that bridge between a general lack of knowledge of where to find these things and the actual things.
Right. Yeah. It just kind of reminds me of like organic food, where everyone's like, you should buy organic. Well, yeah, it's kind of expensive.
Yes.
And then, you know, and now it's becoming more and more accessible. But for a while, you're like, whoa, I'm going to have to pay this much more for not to have additional pesticides in my food. But anyway,
it's the same. It is exactly the same. And knowing where to find it, how to find it, what to look for, reading labels. This doesn't just apply for food. And I'm glad that you brought that, because a lot of people are being more conscious about their food. But it should be what you're putting on your body as well. Yeah. Clothing fits on your body. When you wash the clothes, the particles of the polyester, which is made of, you know, PU plastic, that goes into the oceans. And those microplastics is what's going on into the giant gyres in the Pacific, like the Pacific Ocean garbage patch, which I actually did a tech talk about. And I learned so much. I didn't even know that clothes affected the ocean that way. And so even if you're living in Montana, we're still affecting the oceans with the river runs and things like that.
Yeah. And you had a post, I think, right, where you were talking about the oceans.
Yes, I talked about Ocean Day,
World. Yeah. Never seen that.
Yes.
So now, talking about, you said you're, you know, rebellious because having hair that's curly and different than those around you. Talk about your curly hair journey, because there's not a lot of, you know, I guess being Afro-Latina, being Dominican, I know as soon as I got a certain age, they were like, let's cut your hair, let's relax it, and all this stuff. And having curly hair, it was definitely like a journey to get to a place where I kind of knew how to just to kind of take care of my hair. Yeah. So let's talk about your hair journey.
I've always been a rebel, like I said. We're pointing that out first. Yeah. Nelly the rebel. In fact, when I was little, like in kindergarten, my parents got me this little plaque that went on my bedroom door that had a little girl with wild curly hair and a whole bunch of little symbols around, like if they were cursing, and she was mad, and it said, temper, temper. And I thought, that's not fair. That's so mean. But yes, I've never liked to wear like puffy dresses when I was little. I didn't want to get my hair blown out because it was too hot. And if you've ever been to a Dominican hair salon, you know your scalp and your ear is in danger, girl.
Yes. And they're like, and you're like, this hurts. And
it hurts.
Like, knock it off.
My aunt, my tia, owns and still owned a salon when we were little in uptown Manhattan. And I would go every Saturday to get my hair blown out as a very young child. I left New York when I was like 8. So imagine, since I was very little, I got my hair blown out almost every week. I did not wear my hair curly when I was young. I think there's one picture of me with a fro when I was 2 years old, because I was too young to blow out. But oh my gosh, I really would think about these things. I'm like, when I have a child, will I be this crazy with my kids? And no, I'm trying to break this cycle because it's too much.
Yes.
But I know that my parents had, especially my mother, a hard time dealing with my curly hair, combing it and whatnot. And only to discover in the 80s, when my mom decided not to blow out her hair, she would keep it curly too. And I was like, excuse me, why am I over here, you know, suffering? But I think it was when I was around 13 or 14, I can't remember the exact age, that I decided I wanted to do a relaxer, because all of my friends had straight hair. Even the curly ones that you can tell that they would normally have straight hair, they had their little blowouts and their relaxed hair and all that, and I wanted one. And as soon as I got it done, I was, I did not like it. It wasn't good. My mom did it herself, which was probably not the best idea. And my ends were all broken. It looked like a broom. It was so bad. Oh, and I never did it again. Never, ever, ever. But I would still go and get my regular blowouts. But if I didn't want to get a blowout, and I would say something like, I just want to have my regular hair. I just want to let it breathe. And my dad would say things. Sorry if he hears this. would say things like, muchacha, go get your hair done. This is like a mess. That you get look like you have a bird's nest up there. And I was so sad all the time thinking about how my God-given hair and attributes were considered ugly or bad, you know, like they would say bad hair, pelo malo.
Yeah.
It was pajón, maranta, you name it. And it was very sad for me because I was like, well, I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. And I never found myself to be pretty when I was little. Never. Mm-hmm. I always said like, oh, I want to, can you change my name from Janelle to Jasmine? Because Jasmine is the prettiest girl in the class. And she had a blowout and she was Dominican and Puerto Rican and she had like the biggest hair in the world, but they kept it down with the blowout. And so that was, they kept it under control. I wonder what she's doing these days. I'm rambling. I'm sorry. But really it was in high school where I was experimenting with my looks and my entire image, and I wanted to start keeping my hair curly. And the big act of rebellion was when at senior prom I did a curly updo, and my dad was livid. He was like, you didn't go to the salon, this is like you just got out of bed. And it wasn't. I can show you a picture. It was very nice, and I had a tiara on, and I had, you know, little ringlets falling on the sides. It was done in a way that I felt very beautiful. And so to get criticized for it, it was a little hurtful. But in reality, I was like, well, then I'm doing it right. If you're criticizing me, then I'm doing it right. Because that's right. What I wanted to do. I wanted to shock everyone. And then I just started embracing my curly hair really through college. I wore it natural, cut it really short. And I was just doing, you know, like a big chop, and I left it natural. I didn't put any product in it, just beautiful conditioner, very nice, you know, good products, and let my hair do its thing. And now it's popular. It's so funny. I went to college in 2000, and 21 years later, people are embracing curly hair and complimenting you on it. I kept it natural in early 2000s, and I did get a lot of like, oh, you would look so much prettier if you had it straight. I'm like, and you would look so much prettier if you'd be quiet, rude.
No, it's, that is very parallel to the experience I had, you know, and high school is around the time that I started wearing it curly and people going, hey, your hair just kind of like that. Yeah, it is. Okay. You not pitch it. You know, but it's great. Cause now, you've kind of, you've gone to the place where it's really healthy, it's beautiful, and it's long. And now it's a thing too. So yay you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Thank it's you. I'm like, but, I was cool before it was cool. Okay.
Exactly. Right. But it is culturally, I think finally now I hear more Dominicans embracing curly hair. But when we would go visit every 2 years when I was younger, they'd be like, you know, people on the street, are you going to go get your hair done? Like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, what is wrong with people?
Yes. I think a big inspiration for my curly health journey, because I kept my hair natural for many years. And I was looking at photos from when I moved to San Antonio in 2012. My hair was not healthy. I had dyed it a lot and I wasn't doing like treatments enough. And I really wasn't caring for it how it's supposed to be. So when I decided to cut it, it was because I had those burnt ends and I wasn't really properly caring for it and cutting it frequently and all of those hair care things that we're told today. So once I started that part of the journey towards healthy hair, I think that's when people started to embrace it and be like, oh my gosh, keep your hair curly. It's so good. But when I show the comparison, people were like, wow, that is a big difference. It's one thing to decide to wear your hair natural, but it's another thing to have it in a healthy way that it reflects your inner body health. Because it also involves with the food that you intake, how much water you drink. So it's not just superficial, it's internal as well. So it just reflects a whole, I guess, body of health, in my opinion.
Your crown. your crown. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. But I have still, even with the compliments, I'll still get crazy comments. I remember one time I was talking to someone in the hall at my workplace because I have a corporate job too. And I was stopped by this person and they were like, oh, what are your plans for the weekend? And I said, oh, I'm going to a wedding. This was like 2 years ago. It wasn't even that long ago.
Yeah.
I'm going to a wedding. And they were like, oh, and are you going to like do something different with your hair? And I thought that was an interesting question. I was like, not necessarily. Why? He's like, because you would look so much like more formal and polished if you were to straighten your hair. And I was like, well, I mean, it depends, I guess. I was so uncomfortable. And at the end, I say, well, maybe I will blow it out. Maybe I won't. I guess you'll have to wait and see. And then she walks off saying, well, I mean, a wedding is the one time you don't want to go out looking like a hoochie, which I'm pretty sure she didn't know what hoochie meant, because how does curly hair equivalent to hoochie mama style? Yeah. Whatever that is too, because what if I did want to wear like a full on, you know, bronze metallic little dress? And my big old curly hair looking like I came out of area, you know, Studio 54 or something like that. Yeah. But it was such a random thing to say. And I was deeply offended. I'm like, why would anyone say that?
Yeah, my mom would say atrevida.
Oh, interesting.
Just the crazy comments like that, because there's this kind of idea of beauty being with straight hair, you know, versus curly hair. Like, what does that have to do with like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's those European standards of beauty that we will never fit because we're not fully European.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The thing about that, yeah, being fair skinned and having straight hair considered the good hair.
Yeah,
that's just not it for me. And I think that was part of me also embracing my Afro Latinidad, because me accepting that this is the way I was born and that it is beautiful and it is just as normal as any other type of hair texture, skin color, and all of that. So that was also part of my journey into accepting and embracing my Afro Latinidad. Part of that had a lot to do with my hair.
Yeah. And also it's just lower maintenance.
Oh, yeah. Let's be honest.
You can go out and if it's raining, you're not like, oh my God, or I got to cover my hair. It's just like, you can just live.
Yeah.
You know, it's not getting in the way of life. So,
but it is a lot of work. I don't know.
It is a lot of work, but it's not like it's going to get fuzzy all the time. Like, I don't know. I know for me when I blow it out and the morning's kind of misty, I'm like, oh shoot.
Yeah.
I'm screwed. So that was part of why in high school I was like, okay, I gotta change this up. It's not that serious.
And you know what's funny, whenever I do blow out, because hey, I like the versatility every once in a while.
Yeah.
People are so shocked and they were like, ooh, I thought you were embracing your curls. I'm like, I'm embracing myself. So if I wanna wear my hair the way I wanna wear it, I'm making it so. But I'm not gonna do any chemical treatments for sure, because I don't want to do anything permanent.
Right, right.
That would damage my natural curl. Mm-hmm.
And your hard work.
Oh, yes, of course. Never again.
No. So, okay. Now we've talked about sustainable fashion, curly hair, Afro-Latina, your experiences with mental health, and you know, how you've shared your experience of having a miscarriage and really help people feel seen and valued. So where can everyone find you so they can follow up and read more and hear more about your message?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm The Fashion Lotus all across the board. You can find me on Instagram, which is probably my main social media platform. Also on Facebook, just like that, as The Fashion Lotus, and my blog, thefashionlotus.com. And I'm also on YouTube. We're doing more videos on sustainable fashion hauls and curly hair care as well. Those are my big focuses. And of course, wellness. Wellness is one of the things that I love to talk about and share.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the Don't Mix In podcast. It's an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Vivian. It is so good to speak to a fellow curly hair sis, Dominican sis, doing it up. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Like what you're hearing? Go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.
You can also share the podcast on Instagram and tag me at Live by Viv. As far as my music, it's The Croft by Joachim Karud. And everything we talked about in this episode can be found in the show notes on liveByViv.com. Okay, and remember, don't mix in because you don't need to.